joined in the studio by two fantastic writers. It is the book club for April, and joining me is Sylvia Kent, who is a journalist, blog writer, writer of 10 books, Billericay Readers Group. She's got Barking and Dagenham from Old Photographs is out right at this minute, and she's also got a tremendous blog as well, which is sylviakent.blogspot.co.uk. And our other guest in the studio today is Susan Hedegas. I knew I was going to get that wrong. I just knew it. She's also an author and a freelance writer. She grew up in the East End of London, now lives in Billericay, which I was talking about only just earlier. She's got a BA honours degree, and her book The Hidden Green Man in Essex was published in 2011. She writes for magazines. She's also a writer of a book, Type 2 Diabetes for Real Men. And you can find out more about Susan at www.susanhegedus.com. That's H-E-G-E-D-U-S. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
I got these. It always sounds like Charlie's Angels. Can you just say good morning, Charlie?
Yeah. Good morning, Charlie.
We remember Charlie's Angels, don't we?
You're wonderful. You'd be a wonderful agent for both of us. My goodness.
Thank you very much. It's my big mouth. Now, Sylvia, I haven't seen you for 2 months.
Last
month you were in with the lovely Nick Field.
Yes,
So tell us everything you've been up to. You're with the Billericay Readers Group.
Yes.
And you've got your book, Barking and Dagenham from Old Photographs, which has been out a while. It's your 10th book, is it? Or
Yes, it is.
And it's doing really well.
It's doing very well. Mainly in East London, and I've just discovered that Susan started in East London. Is that right, Susan?
Yes.
So that's good. Yes, it's going well. Lots and lots of book signings and presentations with this, what is it, PowerPoint. I've learnt to make little films, which is lovely. I enjoy that. And I can stick all the pictures up, use them or not. Mm. We don't want to kill people by PowerPoint, do we? But it's fun.
Yep. And what books are you reading at the moment? Because you always take the Billericay Readers Group, and there's loads all over the country. If you like your books, you can get involved. And basically, you get it's quite good, because the thing is, some people get stuck in a genre and you think, I'm not going to read that. And if you join a Readers Group, they basically give you out books and you get to do something, read something different.
You certainly do. And Essex, can I say, we're very proud of Essex. We have about 670 groups, reading groups, which I think is the most in the land, in the UK.
Yeah.
And they're all going very well. No men's groups, but ours in Billericay has been going 15 years, and we're very lucky. They get the books first, we read them, and then we meet together and have a good old row sometimes.
See, we need a programme like this. We need a positive programme on Essex, I feel. Did you not feel, Susan?
Yes, I think Essex can often seem like it's like the end of the road. We've had lots of stuff on it recently with the Towie, but I think there's a lot of Essex that's really beautiful and very quaint, and I think people don't get to see that Essex.
No.
They have a certain idea about Essex, and it could be very inaccurate.
When I was younger, people used to say to me, where are you from? I'm from Seven Kings originally, and I say from Essex. Mm. And now when people sometimes say, where are you from? I say, I'm from London. Because as soon as you say Essex, you suddenly think people conjure up that you're going to be wearing... It goes back probably even to the 80s, where you'd be wearing very blonde hair, white shoes and a handbag.
That's right.
Yes.
It's a shame, really.
And it is a shame, because it's such a fantastic... Brentwood, I can't afford to live here.
It's very expensive, but it's very nice. In a recent poll, in connection with the 50 years, that's the whole point of writing the book about Barking and Dagenham, because it's 50 years on the 1st of April that they went into London. They were no longer Essex.
Yep.
And in a poll, they went round, I think one of the other stations found that 60% of people in Romford and places like Upminster and so all reckon they were still in Essex, and certainly Barking and Dagenham.
Yeah.
So isn't that strange? Mm.
Yep.
And it's 50 years. Yep. Even they weren't even born. I was.
Well, you look quite old, but you look fantastic. Anyone seen a picture of Sylvia Kent? It's very, very attractive.
Thank you.
Very attractive. So what books are you reading at the moment with the Billericay Readers Group?
Right. Well, we're reading The Line of Beauty by A. Hollinghurst. And I just at the moment, it's very hard for me to read and write because, as Susan will know, you're reading non-fiction books to help you with your work.
Yeah.
So I finished a lovely book called The Miniaturist by Jessie Burton, who was in part of the Essex Book Festival in Chelmsford, and that is fabulous. That's her first book, and it's going to be made into a film.
Yeah.
It's about Amsterdam in about 1680. A fabulous book. But the other book, I'm reading a book called Paul No More Binds. I brought it to show you because it's about the EastEnders going into the fields of Kent. And that was my subject on Saturday at the Valence House Museum. I had to give a lecture, which is why I put all my old photos onto this PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it would work. Oh, so belt and braces. I also put it on a DVD just in case.
Yep.
But both worked. Mm. So we had a good audience. We had people from the East End. And their memories were about the same as mine, yep. You know.
So it is one of those things with books, even with me. I in fact, was at home. I went onto YouTube. My mum was sitting. My mum's 85, and I sat there, and I went onto YouTube. I said, well, see if we can find any old pictures, because a lot of people put them up on YouTube now. And we sat there, and we went through Seven Kings and Ilford, and my mum, we paused it. She went, I remember that. That was a tram.
Yes.
And even me, when I'm looking back,
yes.
I'm thinking, oh, that's from the 1980s.
That's, right.
That's from the 1990s.
Yes.
And you do, when you look at old photographs,
yes.
It brings back, because we do like to sort of remember
yes.
the way things were.
The way it's called nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I suppose I'm a nostalgia merchant, but I think Susan may be too, because your last book, the book before
yes.
the present one, that was really from the past, wasn't
yeah.
it?
I mean, The Hidden Green Man, that's about medieval Essex, really. Mm. It's all the medieval churches with these beautiful beautiful statues and gargoyles, and the Green Man is very different.
Yeah,
it's foliage over the face, but all these things are here, present in Essex, and I think sometimes we don't realise it. A medieval church, you may not think sometimes that's a place to go to look at history, but it's amazing if you go, especially in Essex, some of the medieval churches are so quaint, and you go in and you see all sorts of spectacular architecture.
What made you actually get into sort of looking at that period in history? What was it that attracts you to that era?
Well, really, it just started off with a television programme. It was just by chance, because I don't really watch TV much. But and it was about the Green Man, and it just inspired me. There was some huge mystery about it, and there still is, and that is the attraction.
So is it actually a picture that sort of appears all over the place, or is it...
It's a stone, iconic head, male head, with foliage around it. It can come from the mouth, the eyes, or it can be around it can hide inside it. It's like you have to look very carefully, because a lot of priests or vicars might have a Green Man in the church and not realise. And this kind of... I found that fascinating, and I thought, well, if it's medieval... I realised there are so many medieval churches around Essex, that I thought, well, let me try and have a look. And there was a lady, Ruth Wiley, who had a directory of them, and she said if I could look around Essex, that would be great, because nobody had actually done that. Essex had been kind of forgotten, and surprisingly there was loads of green men.
And
Essex,
is this meant to be, because when you say it kind of comes across, although they're in, it's in churches, it does sound a little bit on the sinister side. So is it
yeah.
a good thing, or is it meant to be sort of an imp or something
nature? It's very mysterious thing, actually, and nobody really knows what he comes from. There's a lot of hype that he was like the beginnings of spring, and it was to do with the Maypole dance and all this kind of thing, but that is actually not accurate. He is really probably a tree spirit, and lots of people have made stories around it. You know, the Greek gods is something else that comes up. Medieval masons would make them into that kind of look and shape, because it suited them. That's the kind of thing they were interested in. And so it can branch over into anything you want, really. And now modern green men you often find in sort of nurseries, vegetable fruit nurseries, because it represents green and living well and organic. Mm. And so the meaning keeps changing, but nobody really knows what it came from. All we really do know is it came originally from Roman masks on their burial grounds.
Yeah.
And it was to do with wine, which comes in with the gods Bacchus, the god of wine, and people promoting that often in off licences. It just ranges over everything, really.
Now, if you want to get a copy of the book, it's called The Hidden Green Man in Essex. It's published in 2011, but you will be able to pick it up all over the place. It'll be on Amazon and etc. It is the book club for April. I can't believe the year is going so quick, Sylvia. I'm joined by writer Sylvia Kent. And I'm also joined by writer Susan Hegedus. I'm going to get there eventually. We were just talking to Susan about a book, The Hidden Green Man. It isn't available on Amazon, but you can get it through your website.
Yeah.
Yep, yes. on your website, which is Susan Hegedus, I'm saying it again, .com. And I will put all the details up right at the end. You play flute.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you take up playing the flute? Was it when you were a teenager?
Yeah, and then I forgot about it, and then I took it up again a few years ago. And, yeah, I really do enjoy it. I tend to play it in the cathedral.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of those instruments you don't see that many people playing anymore, the flute, and it's a fantastic sound.
Me.
Oh, you brought it with you.
I see.
You should be playing something. You would be able to play something after 12 o'clock for us. Would you like to?
Yeah, okay.
Lovely, there we go. Just put you on the spot. Get the flute out, start playing it.
Wonderful,
there we go.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you about your other book, which is, because it's a subject, my mum is actually diabetic, and you've got Type 2 Diabetes for Real Men, which is your book. So, tell us about do you suffer from diabetes yourself?
Well, no, it's not me. My husband suffers from diabetes, type 2, and it caused him it was very upsetting, let's put it that way. He was probably a diabetic for quite a while, but he was one of these men that didn't want to go to the doctors, hated having an appointment at the doctors.
Yeah.
And that's why it's reflected in the title, really, because it is so important if you have the symptoms, feeling very thirsty and was a huge one, or suddenly feeling you've got to eat something really quickly, like a bit of sugar. He was having all this, so I pushed him to go to the doctors, and that was in 2010 actually, and it turned out he was diabetic and he was having these awful sharp pains in his feet. But it was the shock, because you just don't expect it to happen.
No.
Like you're in your 40s and you're fine, and then suddenly you find out you're a diabetic. And what I found with him actually was that he really kicked against having a healthy diet.
Yeah.
He just hated the idea of it. You know, his love of his life is food, and he loved his bacon sandwiches and his Indian takeaways and his Chinese takeaways, and he didn't want to give it up, and it had a great problem actually trying to get through and say, well, you know, you're going to have to calm it down.
Yep.
And he did realise after a few weeks. And that's what inspired me to write the book, because what I felt was, you know, diabetic is a term. People think of it as a condition. He hated the idea of the word condition, or that there was something really wrong with him.
Yeah.
So what I was really trying to get through into the book was that, you know, this can happen to anyone, and it can definitely happen to people that love their food. And what do you do in a situation like this? You don't want to go on rabbit food, and you don't want to just be, you know, thinking every mouthful you put into your mouth, what is this? Is it right? Has it got the right glycemic index? All that kind of thing is something that I felt needed to be calmed down, and I wanted to write about what would work for the average person, the average man, really, as well. Who
it's type 2, which you can just explain. You've got type 1 and you've got type 2. So what is the difference between type 1 and 2?
Well, type 1 you would inject insulin, whereas type 2 can be helped with medication.
Yes, it's tablets and your diet,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
Yeah. So it's tablets, but it's also diet. And I thought it was the one thing I could help with, because the medication, you know,
it's great. It's come along in years.
Yeah.
But the diet was something I could help with. And the one principle I have in the book is that you can have the nice bits too. You can have a dessert.
Yeah.
But you've just got to put things in moderation.
Mm.
But I think the worst thing is when you could feel really miserable and think that, well, I can't have anything. I'm a diabetic, so I can't ever have chocolate. I can't ever have, something with butter or, fried or whatever. But in the book, I have done a comprehensive 7-day eating plan that shows that you can have bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So that way you don't go off track. And if you do go off track, it's not the end of the world. As long as you come back to the eating plan again. And it certainly worked for him. He went on this. And he got used to it. Your taste buds change.
Yeah.
You think it can't happen, but you actually can get used to an eating plan that will help you. And there's lots of bits and things that can help, like curry leaves. Is a big one I put in the book because it's very helpful to diabetics and herbs like cinnamon, spices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it's my mum's type 2 diabetes, and she won't buy the diabetic chocolate because it's an if you can avoid it, you're well and good. But she will have chocolate because she likes the sweet stuff. But she has to weigh that up with other things, and it isn't just about chocolate because, as people know, there's sugar in absolutely everything.
Yes.
And also, if you don't look after yourself when you've got diabetes, and I have known people my age group and younger that are still drinking, which alcohol is, because it's full of sugar, and my mum's friend from, I think she passed away, she wasn't very old, she was about 60, and she was diabetic, and she just carried on eating, and she had bad, my mum's feet are beautiful, but if you're diabetic and you don't watch your sugars, you can end up losing your limbs, and some people just won't change at all, and this is one of the things that you can actually, with your diet and being sensible, you can carry on and have an absolutely normal life without having to inject and stay on the tablets. So it's just, some people don't, which I can't understand. I mean, I can imagine it's a big shock when somebody says you're diabetic, but it's rather, with your book, you actually look through and say, I can have this, oh, I can have, I can have that.
Yeah, you
can and have lose weight. I think he lost weight.
Yeah.
It was a bonus, wasn't it?
And sometimes that can reverse. Sometimes if you are overweight, that can actually reverse the diabetes. And they are coming out now with, they think they probably will have a cure for diabetes within the next 10 or 20 years. So fingers crossed they'll be able to give somebody an injection and it will, counteract it.
Yes. Susan's book, which is selling well, also came out at the time when Susan Jebb, made a program. It was a film, also radio, also double page in the newspaper. And it just echoes what you've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So two Susans on the subject. And I think if they get her book, I think it will help them.
So there we go. That's type 2 diabetes for real men. And we also have to mention, now I've only seen this program I think once, and I watched it once, and it's a Mr. Drew.
Yes.
Tell us how you know Mr. Drew.
he's the head teacher at Brentwood County High, and I'm a teaching assistant there.
Yeah.
So that's how I know him.
And what would you say is changed in education from when you went to school? What are the main differences, do you think, now?
I don't know, really. It's such a long time ago.
Would you say children are better behaved now, or they're not as well behaved, or is it a different way of discipline?
I think obviously mainly it's teenagers, and teenagers are teenagers.
Yeah.
There's always going to be stuff going on. But perhaps maybe teachers, I would say it was more that side, are more able and more maybe have looked or researched it more, how to deal with any behaviour problems that there might be, because and probably teachers working as a team as well. I think that all that kind of side of it is probably different to when I went to school, where it was just one teacher, because obviously as a teaching assistant I'm there to assist teachers, so you've got that element as well.
Yeah.
So it is very different in that way.
I think all schools, the only thing I think with schools is, and I've heard this said from one of my friends who used to be a music teacher, is a need to keep on with having music in, and creative stuff in studios, in schools, because it makes a big difference to the shy children if they can play piano or if they can play guitar or do something, just the creative. It's, it's a great thing.
I think the creative is really good. And I think, I'm in some lessons. It's called food and nutrition now. I think it was food technology before. And I've noticed, certainly, it's different to when I went to school. It was very set, and you had to do certain things. And here, there's a lot of freedom. Children can make lots of different... they can have lots of different cakes, savoury, sweet, whatever, and work out how this would help other people, like, for example, gluten-free recipes. Mm. They're encouraged to look at all that, which is something, certainly when I was at school, I didn't get. It was just certain basic things, you know, lemon meringue, strawberry tart. Mm. But here, you're made to think of everything cultural. Mm. If people have allergies, that is certainly something I did notice was very different, and they had a bit more choice. They could think of what they would really like to cook and what they'd be interested in, rather than it just being set out. And of course, I think that's always a very good idea, because if you're cooking it, it's a very basic skill, but it's so important. Mm. And it encourages them to cook from scratch, which is also important.
Yes. Now we are going to come back with some flute playing after 12. It's not going to be Sylvia. Don't play the flute, do you, Sylvia?
Girls do, my girls.
All right, but give them a quick go on it. Now we'll be back after the 12 o'clock. So just to throw Susan in there. She brought you. If you bring your flute to the studio, Susan, this is what's going to happen.
That's what happens.
Now we'll be back with live flute after 12.
Okay.